The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's good to be back with you. Just to remind you here at the top of the program, we're excited about our first online appearance campaign scheduled for this Sunday afternoon here in the UK, 4 p.m. our time in Oklahoma. That would be 10 a.m. Sunday morning, 8 a.m. out west on the west coast, and I guess 11 a.m. on the eastern coast. We'd love for you to join us for the show. All you need to do on the day of the live presentation, all you need to do is visit the trumpet.com website, click on the large banner at the top of the page, and if you're logged in with the trumpet.com, you have an account already set up, then you'll be able to see the live stream right there on the page. So if you haven't yet registered on the trumpet.com website, make sure that you do that today or tomorrow or before the show actually begins. The live show begins on Sunday, and we'll be happy to see you. I know there's been a lot of work going on these last couple of days that I've been away here in anticipation of that event. Plus, also we're anticipating a special visit from my father and his traveling party coming up soon. So there's quite a lot of work going on around Edstone. And, well, just a lot going on all the time with respect to God's work and with respect to our individual families. We were off in Killarney, Ireland on, Tuesday and Wednesday. We just got back actually about an hour ago. But my son was competing down there in the All-Irelands event. That's like the second most important step dancing contest or competition besides Worlds, and it was great. He got sixth, by the way. There were 34 competitors coming from all over the world, and a great competition. He's in an age group where it's not just one individual that dominates the competition like it is with a few other groupings, and so it keeps it really interesting. There's four boys, I think, that are in his group that have won the world championships before. And he's doing his best to try to nip at their heels along the way. But what was really, fun about seeing these boys is that I think I saw several of them. Of course, my own son's been with me from the get-go. But I've seen a number of these other boys when they were 11, 12, 13 years of age. And so I know very little bit about them. But and like you even heard on yesterday's program with Mr. McDonald, they're attached to the gadgets and things of that nature, which certainly is not super healthy for their mental development and so on. But these are motivated young men, and they're very driven, and they're very athletic, and you can tell that they're putting in their time day in and day out to develop this very difficult skill. And when the boys are no longer boys, when they're young men, 17, 18, 19 years of age, you see a lot of just raw power and athleticism on the stage. And so it's been great to see Jude and to see some of the boys that he associates with at these competitions, to see them grow up and to turn into to young men. A lot of them, you can even see a pretty big difference between the 16-year competition and then the 17-year competition, just with the growth, the physical growth of these fellows. And I just thought it was interesting in listening to some of Mr. Brad McDonald's program from yesterday. He was subbing in for me talking about this protest. And I mentioned this, I believe, on one of the programs last week. But this protest at Trafalgar Square, all of these teenagers that got up and left their classroom on Friday, this would have been a week ago, to protest in and around Trafalgar Square because of climate change. And then you had, as Brad McDonald brought out on yesterday's show, you had all of the press, for the most part, the adults that were weighing in saying that, well, this is great. These young people, they're showing all kinds of courage. And they're so far advanced morally than we were when we were their age. How foolish, really, to celebrate this kind of anarchy. That's the beginning stages of anarchy. And here the adults are out there celebrating that sort of activity. And well, it is. There's only a few left. You can look into the military, for example, and maybe at the Olympics, where you can actually see some young people, outside of God's church, I mean. There's only a few areas left in this world where you see young people who are actually, for all of their faults, and they have them, even our young people in the church, they have their faults, but to see them motivated and driven to pursue a talent, whether it's music or dance or academics or study, whatever it is, it's refreshing to see in a world where so many young people are just wasting away the all-important preparatory years. That's what Mr. Armstrong calls them in The Missing Dimension in Sex, those years between 16 and 25. These are the all-important years of preparation. This is the time to prepare for adulthood. This is the time to feed your mind, to strengthen your body, to pursue excellence. And so when you see that among young people, it's inspiring. It gets you excited. And of course, as a parent, you have some special insight into your own child. Back when he was 7, 8, 9 years of age, just anxious to be able to go off to his first youth camp. He got in early. So as a 12-year-old, we wanted him to keep up with... he got in, I think, the day before PYC started, because there was an open slot, and this was back when we lived in Edmond, and they needed an extra boy, and so we were happy to let him participate, but we kind of worked out a deal with the administrators to see if he could come home at lunch so that he could continue with his piano lessons. He was just getting started in piano. So he was out at camp maybe 90% and then 10% at home. And each time that he'd come home at lunch, he would update my wife on how it was going at PYC. Of course, he was the youngest one in his dorm, probably the smallest in his dorm. And then all these years, throughout his teen years, most of them spent right here at Edstone, and seeing him develop physically, mentally, spiritually, and becoming one of the older ones at camp, and then pursuing certain skills, as every young person should, as they get themselves ready for Armstrong College, as they get themselves ready for the responsibilities of adulthood, for marriage and family, for their career. What a waste. In so many cases, you see young people today wasting away those years. And of course, even at Irish dance competitions, there's a lot about those competitions that aren't especially good. Certainly, well, I won't get into all of the things that are wrong with it, but you do see young people up close. And again, the attachment, like Brad McDonald said yesterday on the show, to gadgets, to phones and so on, the materialism. You see a lot of that too. But congratulations to those young people who are pursuing excellence, who are driving themselves, who are, even if it's in one particular area, who are building discipline, who work hard, who sweat, who drive, who push. It's good to see that kind of growth. Mr. McDonald yesterday, I was excited. I just listened to part of it this morning on the trip back. He was talking about Horatio Nelson as a teenager, just making a dramatic comparison between a 13 or a 14-year-old Nelson who was just itching to go off and to become a seaman, to become a great admiral for the British Navy. We went through this in our book club just last week. Speaking of Trafalgar Square, there's probably quite a few young people here in the UK that know nothing about Trafalgar, the Battle of Trafalgar, and Horatio Nelson. at our book club last Thursday. I quoted from this this book by Andrew Lambert, where it's an article actually at BBC, saying that during the engagement at Trafalgar on 21 October 1805, the Royal Navy annihilated the greatest threat to British security for 200 years, but lost Britain's national hero in the process. He was, well, Horatio Nelson was stubborn in a kind of way that took risks. He was stubborn in a courageous sense. With the rest in his, on his ship pleading with him to stand back or to hunker down as they were coming upon enemy fire, he wouldn't do it. He was right out front. And it says here, little wonder the battle transcended the mundane calculation of ships and men, victory and defeat. It guaranteed Britain's control of the oceans, the basis of her global power for over a century. Andrew Roberts alludes to this in his book on Napoleon. That's why we brought it up at our book club. For over a century, this is what cleared the way for British naval dominance and thus the emergence of the British Empire. This battle. Because you had Napoleon and his troops sweeping across continental Europe. But you had the British Navy mastering the sea, dominating the sea. Both of these prophecies being fulfilled. The fifth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire on continental Europe and the blessings of Abraham poured down upon the people of Ephraim right there in the early 1800s. The greatest naval battle in the history of Great Britain. It happened at Trafalgar, and you've got this iconic monument in the heart of London. With young people, as you heard yesterday, scaling the monument, probably completely unaware of its significance. From David Howarth's famous sea battles, it says, the long blockade of all Napoleon's ports in the years before Trafalgar was the greatest sustained and communal feat of seamanship there has ever been or ever will be. And speaking of Lord Nelson's courage, it says, avoiding personal danger was not Nelson's idea of duty. And he would not listen. He would not listen. This was an overwhelming victory for Britain. I'll get to those numbers here in just a second. But Nelson sacrificed his life. It says, on the contrary, danger always put him in the best of spirits. He was a courageous young man. Of course, by the time of the sea battle at Trafalgar, I forget how old he was. He was in his middle-aged years. But still, what a remarkable teenager this was. And then a courageous adult who prayed the night before the battle. His famous prayer, he said, may the great God whom I worship grant to my country and for the benefit of Europe in general a great and glorious victory. It says, for myself individually, I commit my life to him that made me, and may his blessing alight on my endeavors for serving my country faithfully, to whom I resign myself, and the just cause which is entrusted to me to defend. Amen. The French and Spanish fleet lost 22 ships in that battle. And Britain, what would become Great Britain, did not lose one ship. It was the most decisive naval battle by far of the Napoleonic Wars. Britain lost 1,666 men in the battle. And the Spanish and French lost almost 14,000 men. But one of those few from the British fleet to sacrifice his life in battle was Lord Nelson. He was shot by enemy fire and then taken down below the deck. Perhaps the most famous deathbed scene in Britain's history. As he looked around the bed at those who were watching him die, he said, "Thank God I have done my duty. Thank God I have done my duty." He did it for his God. He sacrificed for his God. He sacrificed for his country. He sacrificed himself. A little bit later on in the history, on continental Europe, someone presented Napoleon, who had a lot of hatred and animosity toward Britain. He wanted to invade Britain. He never could do it. And of course, after Trafalgar, that was it. Britain was safe from Napoleon's march because it's surrounded by water, and well, the British Navy dominated the sea. But a few years after that momentous victory for Britain, someone presented Napoleon, this French eagle, a medal showing a French eagle holding the British lion in its talons. And Napoleon screamed in response, saying, "How dare you say the French eagle stifles the English lion? I cannot launch upon the sea a single petty fishing boat, but she's captured by the English." He said, "In reality, it's the lion that stifles the French eagle." Some amazing history and prophecy, fulfilled prophecy. My father wrote in the former prophet's book, this was one of the greatest sea battles in history. It saved the British Empire. It appeared that Captain Nelson was outnumbered and outgunned, but was he? He turned to God with a beautiful prayer. I read it to you a moment ago. He committed his life to his Creator. Nelson sacrificed his life for the British Empire, and God gave him the victory. What a shame that our young people today, they're not taught this history, not to the extent that they should be. Trafalgar Square officially got its name in 1830. The Nelson Column erected in 1843, the column standing 170 feet high, supporting this statue of Lord Nelson on the top. And young people last Friday scaling the statue, or at least scaling part of the column, really without any idea of its significance. Do our young people, do our children need education? Do they need their parents to keep them grounded, to keep them focused, to keep them motivated? We certainly need God involved in our families, and as we prayed as a family over the last couple of days, we're very thankful to God for providing us with the means to be able to do some of these special competitions or opportunities for our young people. They need those opportunities. But even if you don't have the means to do something abroad or to have lessons for music every single week, there are other activities. There are other sports, there are other pursuits that are much less expensive. But how important is it to keep our young people moving forward in those all-important preparatory years? Mr. Armstrong talks all about it in The Missing Dimension in Sex. When we come back, we'll go through a little bit of that material and a few scriptures even that Mr. McDonald touched on just yesterday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget, we've got our live online appearance campaign coming up this Sunday. Make sure that you that you get an account at the trumpet.com website so that you can watch the event live online. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Perhaps no hour in Britain's history was darker than that preceding World War II. Nazi Germany was arming. Nations in Europe were being conquered, their borders redrawn. Britain, the nation that once ruled one quarter of the earth, teetered on the edge of survival. Many leaders in Britain feared war. They wanted to disarm. They spoke of peace as Europe sank deeper into the pit of war. This dark hour may have been Britain's last, were it not for one man. This man stood alone in the face of adversity at home and abroad. He rose to the occasion when his nation needed him most. He vowed that Britain would never surrender when confronted by forces of evil. Winston Churchill took Britain's most important job during Britain's darkest hour. He did what others were afraid to do. Some doubted his methods, but the results speak for themselves. Churchill led Britain from the precipice of ignominious defeat and possible death to what became one of the nation's brightest hours. What was it that made Winston Churchill so different from other leaders of his time? Surely now, more than ever, this world needs another Winston Churchill. Our booklet, Winston S. Churchill, The Watchman, explains what made this man such a great leader. We would like to offer this booklet to you free of charge. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Growing up as a teenager in the 1980s, I'm sure it was very different than what it is today. Every house, I guess, had a television set with maybe three TV stations. Certainly no one had a mobile phone. I think I can remember in the 80s when the fax machine, that was the big deal. I was working at Kinko's, and of course there were big copy machines that that mass-produced copies of papers. And then there was the fax. People coming in paying like a dollar or maybe it was 50 cents per page to fax something across to a business somewhere. I think it was in the late 80s when we finally got this typesetting department at Kinko's where they had these new, really unique, fascinating-looking machines, little square boxes with a keypad out front, the Apple Macintosh. So that was the beginning of, I guess, desktop publishing, the personal computer, eventually the laptop, all those kinds of technologies. We see where they are today. But back at that time, when I was 12, 13, 14 years of age, I can remember anxiously, eagerly wanting to be a teenager. Could not wait till I turned 13. That was the beginning of YOU, Youth Opportunities United in the Worldwide Church of God. And I went to as many of those activities as I could at age 12, just even if I had to sit and wait. Maybe it was a basketball practice and got right toward the end. They were playing pickup games and someone was tired and I could hop in there and play with the big fellas, play with the older teens. And as soon as I turned 13, I was raring to go. I hit the ground running. And I can remember driving all over, not driving myself, but driving with teen groups in vans or in my parents' car. As we went to youth sports tournaments, tournaments where we could compete against other teams, compete in a spirit of love and cooperation, but nevertheless, hard, strenuous competition. We went to Portland, Oregon. We went to Seattle, Washington, Spokane, Washington, as far away as Salt Lake City, Utah, Missoula, Montana. And occasionally we'd have an event right in our own Tri-Cities, Pasco, Kennewick, Richland, there in southeast Washington State. And it was an active teenage life for me in sports, playing the trumpet, running track, school activities, of course. All kinds of instances where I got nervous. I had to learn how to deal with pressure. My son was telling me that this week, that he's really grateful. And anyone who has their child in step dancing knows there's ups and downs over the years. There's results that come in sometimes that you're not happy with. And at other times, it's great and you're ecstatic. But he was saying that over the long haul, he's just very thankful and appreciative for the fact that he's been put under pressure. I don't see how these boys do it. They train and they train and they train and they do it for 3-4 dances that last maybe 2 minutes each. And they come off stage after those 2 minutes and they're just absolutely exhausted, drenched. It's a great exercise. Dealing with the nerves first thing in the morning. An 8 o'clock timetable. They've got to get out of bed and get on stage and bring energy. And dance in front of 5 judges. And hopefully get the attention of those judges and impress them. It's good for them. Sometimes they do great. Sometimes they fail. And they have to learn how to deal with failure. I know that with my first YOU game, I know that with my first high school game in basketball, my first concert, my first solo in the concert band, playing for first chair in band, nerve-wracking experiences for any teenager. Good opportunities, though, to grow. Well, all those opportunities and activities together. It wasn't like it was just sports and music. So many youth outings. And it continued in the same way when we moved to Oklahoma, Central Oklahoma, when I was 15, right in the middle of my teen years. And all of the cities around that area, Tulsa, Stillwater, Ada, Lawton, Dallas, Texas, Amarillo, Big Sandy, Texas, where Ambassador College was situated. North of Oklahoma, up in Wichita, Kansas City. These congregations in these cities hosted youth events. And it was great for the teens, and it's great. It's awesome to see some of these same kinds of activities. It's a little different today. We're a little smaller and a little more scattered, so the parents have to be a bit more creative. But it's awesome to see so many of these opportunities for our youth. They're there again. God is raising the ruins. And besides just encouraging them to get involved in activities that are maybe high-pressured, I know in my own case, it was also a great motivation for me spiritually when I had a lot going on as a 15-year-old, and I knew I wanted to do well with that first solo in the concert band. I knew that I needed God's help. I knew I needed God to help me calm my nerves. And of course, as I became a little older as a teenager, then I got the first of many different jobs. I mentioned Kinko's. There were quite a few others together with that as I started to think more about saving for college, preparing for Ambassador College. And of course, a lot of that preparation involved just going through the materials that the church produced. I mentioned the Missing Dimension in Sex and the all-important preparatory years. The Ambassador College Bible Correspondence Course, or the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, as we produce it today. If our young people in God's church today will fill their minds with this precious truth, with this family vision It is a family vision. It's God's family. And then drive themselves in whatever it is that they're most interested in. That's the beauty of those youthful years. A 12 and 13-year-old boy, just to take that example, has more time during the summer or during breaks and even after school to pursue piano or some other special aptitude or ability than someone who's maybe middle-aged and has a family of three or four and can't very well pick up an instrument and just start practicing for 2 hours a day. Here we are in the last hour of God's work. We're pushing right to the finish line. And we really need to help our teenagers, our young people, our children to understand who they are, who they represent, and how close we are to the end of this age so that they can really sprint to the finish line. What a world. It's a very different world for our teens today than it was for me back in the 1980s. Paul said that we're in the last days where perilous times would come. Jesus talked about a time when all flesh could be destroyed from off the earth. This is not crazy, wild-eyed speculation. This is Matthew 24. Paul said in that other passage, 2 Timothy 3, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good." This is the world we're living in today. It's a world in revolt, as it says in The Missing Dimension in Sex. A world where people love pleasure more than they love God. That's really the sad part of the way technology is being used today. And you talk about antisocial behavior. You see a row of 4 or 5 11-year-old girls plopped down on a seat, girls that maybe haven't seen each other in months. And so they sit down on 4 chairs to have robust conversation with each other? No, not hardly. They all immediately pull out their phone and start swiping or swooshing or whatever it is that they do with their phone. Goes on everywhere. It's very sad to see that. Here, there's an opportunity to speak to peers face to face. Evil men and seducers, it says, shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. That's down in verse 13. Mr. Armstrong said it's a world in revolt. And you know what else he said in The Missing Dimension in Sex? He said it's a world that's really dominated by the tastes and the influences of the young people. We are living in a very different world from The Missing Dimension in Sex. It says human nature is the same compared to generations ago, he means. But we simply live in a different world today. The emergence of the phonograph, the automobile, the motion picture, radio, television, and other productions of the machine age have brought new influences and changing customs. Human nature, adapting to changing times, expresses itself very differently today. He wrote this back in 1981, or that version of Missing Dimension. And today you add to it cable TV and cell phones, the internet, smartphones, all of that. It's a very different world. Which means as parents, we've got to be on guard. We've got to be vigilant. We've got to be involved in the lives of our children. We've got to talk to them. I mentioned the 17-year-olds that I've seen since they were 11 or 12, and I do try to go up and greet them and ask them what they've been doing. Again, these are some unusual young men. And you'd be surprised how many of them really and truly do appreciate just showing them some attention and praising them when they dance well, or praising them when they do something really well, or when they win an award. I guess we just take it for granted that, well, if he did well there, he must know it. Instead of going up and telling them, you've really worked hard. It shows. Congratulations. You deserve it. Mr. Armstrong said in The Missing Dimension in Sex, in this age of pressures toward promiscuity, blinded by false teachings, adolescents cannot be expected to resist premarital sex unless their minds are opened to intelligent acceptance of God's purposes and laws. In other words, they need to be educated. They need someone to guide their lives. They need someone to tell them right and wrong. They need someone to enforce the rules. In this age of pressures toward promiscuity, they can't be expected to resist all of these pulls themselves. Their minds, he says, their minds need to be opened to intelligent acceptance of God's purposes and laws. They need to understand God's truth. They need to understand the purpose that God's working out here below. That's why they need their parents. That's why they need their fathers. You just see too many children in this part of the world and in the United States, everywhere in the West, especially the West. Children with mothers. Maybe their father's away doing something else, but in far too many cases, the father's just gone. He's absent. Well, I think Brad McDonald went through some of those verses in Isaiah about the upside-down world. In fact, we've gone through some of those verses with you recently. Go back, though, and listen. I mentioned Mr. McDonald's the day before yesterday. Richard Palmer filled in, and he talked about the rising tide of anti-Semitism. I don't want to overlook that program as well. In fact, we have an article at thetrumpet.com today about Britain in particular, a record year. This is kind of the kind of record you don't want. Another record year for anti-Semitism. But look at these past two programs. Richard filling in on Wednesday and then Brad McDonald yesterday. God really is trying to keep us educated and keep us focused. But as parents, whether they're little children or teenagers, or even if they've grown and gone off to college, as in the case of my daughter, still, they need parental involvement and influence. They need parental guidance. They need direction. It's like Mr. Armstrong said, we can't just turn them loose and expect them to resist all of these evil pulls by themselves. It really does just make you thankful for God's truth, God's purpose. It makes you thankful for the academy. It makes you very thankful for Armstrong College as well. When we come back, I'll touch on a few news items. And then in looking at the clock here, we'll see if we have some time at the end of the show for a few emails that have come in over the last couple of weeks. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical. But world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Well, I'll have to dig into the news once again tomorrow morning just to try to catch myself up to speed with all that's been happening this week. I mentioned the two programs, though, filling in my absence. There is a lot, as always, going on. There was a report earlier this week, I think from CNN, predicting that, they're saying that the Mueller report's probably going to be out or finished anyway sometime next week or maybe the week after that. And if CNN is preparing the way for people to be disappointed, people from the far left, of course, there's probably some truth to it. It says Attorney General Bill Barr is preparing to announce as early as next week the completion of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation with plans for Barr to submit to Congress soon after a summary of Mueller's confidential report. According to people familiar with the plans, it says the preparations are the clearest indication yet that Mueller is nearly done with his almost two-year investigation. So CNN says that it's about done. Hey, we might be a little disappointed, but take heart. There's all kinds of other investigations that can be triggered by the House or by other federal prosecutors. But you read between the lines and you see that it looks like Mueller's investigation is going to, I guess fizzle out. But 2 years of this, 2 years of this harassment, 2 years of the lies. Look at this sad case of that actor in Chicago. You talk about Trump derangement syndrome. To fake a hate crime, to fake it, to get two people involved, to lie. And then the press, and these weren't just celebrities. That's what some on the left are now saying. Well, we reported that truthfully. It was the celebrities that ran with it. No, it wasn't. It was CNN that ran with it. These were prominent politicians, some of them running for president. That's saying that this was a modern-day lynching. Another broadcaster saying, I can't believe this is 2019. That someone would pour bleach on this black actor and put a noose around his neck. Well, now we know it was a total hoax. And all to make Donald Trump and his supporters look like hateful racists. That's what it amounts to. And I heard one commentator over the weekend, this was a few days ago, saying that he just couldn't imagine why or how someone, this is a left-wing commentator saying, I can't understand why someone would just create a story and go with it when there was no truth to it. And I thought to myself, well, you guys at CNN have been doing that for the last 3 years. Not in every case, but so eager to run with the conventional wisdom, the way that the left sees it, so eager to run with the story that denigrates the president or that slanders the president, so utterly unconcerned for truth and fairness and for someone's reputation. We've seen it over and again. Got the Smollett case most recently, but the Kavanaugh hearings, we're only a few months away from that. And one of those ladies that came forward slandering Brett Kavanaugh, she has since said, I lied. It was a hoax. None of that happened. She has to come forward and admit it months later. Where is the skepticism in the mainstream media when these sorts of last-minute efforts are in full motion to try to destroy someone because you disagree with them politically? Last week, I didn't have time to get to some of the material that Richard had compiled about the 2019 World Government Summit that was held in Dubai. This was earlier in the month of February. I guess it's a little over a week ago. But you had the managing director of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, who warned that an ominous economic storm is looming over the horizon. And here she is giving this presentation in front of 4,000 world leaders, experts, representatives of big-time world organizations representing 150 countries. So she has a captive audience. She has a worldwide audience. And she spoke of these clouds, these financial clouds that are looming, the trade and the tariff escalations. Trade war, in other words. The financial tightening, as she put it. Brexit, the uncertainty coming from that. And then the economic slowdown in China. She was asked, when she was asked how worried she was just in looking at all these clouds, as she put it, she said, when there are too many clouds, it takes one lightning to start the storm. You think about some of those things Herbert Armstrong said back in the 1980s. Just takes one event, one tragic event to trigger an economic downturn. Too many clouds. It just takes one strike of lightning. So here are these strong warnings, and she's not alone. There's others that have sounded the alarm, but we're not listening. Certainly not in America. They're not listening in Washington, D.C. The Trump administration, the government in Washington, it's borrowing like never before. It was just last week, I think, that the U.S. debt crossed $22 trillion for the first time ever. The debt's gone up over $2 trillion since Donald Trump took office. And you don't hear Republicans say one word about it. For the longest time, we've been led to believe that the Republicans are the ones that are fiscally responsible. That they're the ones who are prepared to tighten the financial belt. Not anymore. Well, before Donald Trump came along, you had Barack Obama, who doubled the national debt during his time as president. And now it's going up at a rate that's just unfathomable. At Yahoo News, speaking of the economy, it says, but with so much talk about the need to reduce the country's debt, why has it continued to balloon? Well, I would wonder why there hasn't been more talk. Has there really been a lot of talk? There certainly hasn't been action. Everyone can agree on that. But where are the alarms going off? The alarm bells? The article says the national debt has become a runaway train that can be easy for the average American citizen to ignore, but the expanding national debt will impact everyone. Rising national debt hurts the economy, in large part thanks to interest that must be paid on the debt. It hurts everybody. It certainly hurts our children. It hurts our future. But who cares about that anymore? We've got, as I said in the first segment, you've got the adults that are praising the unruly children that walk out of class, saying they're developed, they're sophisticated, they're courageous, they're bold. If we only knew what real courage is. CNBC, it says, as auto loan debt has soared, so has the number of people who can't pay with the level of serious delinquencies, breaking past the heights reached just after the financial crisis. In other words, people are finding it difficult to pay for their car loan, their vehicle. So it's not just the national debt. It's the ever-expanding consumer debt. It's the student debt. It's the credit card debt. What happened? All these clouds. What happens when there's a lightning strike? This is all going on when we're being told, anyway, that the economy's doing great. The economy's better than ever. And we've got more and more people that can't pay off their car loan. The average millennial is carrying $32,000 in personal debt. And that's not including a mortgage on a home. That's just $32,000 outside of mortgages, $32,000 in personal debt. I mentioned how grateful we ought to be for the student programs we have at the Academy and at Herbert Armstrong College. Think about the student work program at the college where every single student that comes through AC can pay down that debt, can come in with that modest entrance fee, $4,000, and then work their way out of college with, they may not graduate with this, you know, this huge savings, but they graduate with a little savings, most likely, and no debt. How unusual is that in today's world? Most young people, or even young to middle age, carrying that kind of personal debt, just conclude that we'll never be able to pay it off. Not such a good financial future for many of these young people. Here we are. I've talked about this. I've written about it. There's an article here from a couple years ago, and I was talking about the $20 trillion debt. Now we're at $22 trillion. We're just addicted to deficit spending at every level. Government, state, local, consumer, individual, family, children. Spend, spend, spend. If we need it, if we want it, go for it. Instant gratification, selfishness, greed. Here the United States is the wealthiest nation in the history of the world, and yet we're borrowing at astronomical levels, borrowing as no nation ever has borrowed before. You go back to the founding of the nation, the United States, President Washington, and just how deeply concerned he was about not putting a financial burden on the next generation. He was concerned about his children, his posterity, their future, the debt level that they'd carry or not carry. He wanted the nation to live within its means. Mr. Armstrong preached a similar message for the church and for the families of the church. Yes, give, sacrifice, share. If we do that, like Acts 20 and verse 35 says, God will give back. God will bless us. God doesn't want us to just hoard everything that we have and never give to his work or never give to others. But so many people are just serving themselves, spending on themselves, spending way beyond their means. And look at what it's doing to our nation. The wicked borrows and cannot pay back. It says in the Psalms, we're borrowing and borrowing and borrowing, and when is it ever going to be paid back? The answer is never. And if you asked an honest politician, just like you asked some of those consumers, some of those millennials, how much are you in debt? Oh, $30,000, $40,000. You going to be able to pay that back? No, I don't think so. I bet if you asked the president himself, he'd say, well, we don't need to pay it back. Remember, he's the king of debt. He likes deficit spending, and so do the people that are voted into Washington and at Congress. They love it. Listen to what Mr. Armstrong said in 1983. This is a Plain Truth article. He said, prepare to greatly reduce your standard of living. He went on to say that God's about to punish our nations, to finally bring us to him. So we've got to be ready for what's coming. God does promise protection for his family. But in the meantime, as we're still living in this world, supporting God's work, contributing to that effort, we've got to tighten our belts, financially speaking. Mr. Armstrong said already the noose is around our necks, speaking of our nations, and is almost daily tightening. Economic ills are starting greatly to reduce our standard of living. That's what he was saying back in the 1980s. What would he say today? You go to that IMF conference or that meeting from a week and a half ago, and this IMF spokesman, you consider what she was saying at that conference with 4,000 people coming from all over the world, the leading people of the world. And she was giving a very similar message to what Herbert Armstrong gave to the church many years ago. Well, we'll save our few emails for perhaps tomorrow's program, because that's about all that we have time for today. We thank you for joining us. As always, you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Don't forget to open an account at the Trumpet so you can watch the event Sunday. We'll see you tomorrow.